to Hero Hype, episode 43. We're back with a few more shows this week. Yeah, that's right. Flash and Arrow are back. Legends of Tomorrow is off until next week, but we should have everything back on our screens very, very soon. As always, I'm Donya. I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And as always, if you guys want to get involved in the conversation with us, you can do so by getting hold of us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperbole.com, or you can drop us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. But as we have a couple more shows to talk about this week, let's get straight into your brief history. And this week, I'm giving you a brief history of Silver Banshee. Now, I will point out that this is going to be the Silver Banshee of the New 52 continuity, rather than what is known as Prime Earth. It's very complicated, multiple universes. Marvel aren't the only ones who want to confuse us with their comic book storylines. So, Siobhan Smythe moved to New York from Ireland, looking for a fresh start after the death of her mother. While settling in Queens, Siobhan came into contact with Supergirl and was immediately able to communicate with her in Kryptonian due to her unique ability to pick up languages. With Supergirl's help, she manages to escape the local authorities, and she strikes up a friendship with Kara as they realize they need each other in order to survive. Siobhan's father, the Black Banshee, who was presumed dead, attacks them both, forcing Siobhan to reveal herself as the Silver Banshee, which leads to a battle between the two girls and Siobhan's father. And then Siobhan kind of disappeared a little bit, and we don't know what's going on with her right now, so that's kind of where it's at in the New 52. There's not really a lot to go on, but it is slightly different than the one that we are getting in Supergirl. Right, I guess we'll move on to our TV headlines of the week, which, not really anything of note, other than Jeff Bell discussing the big goodbye that we got on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week. So, Bobby and Hunter have now left Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Michal, who covers Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for Hyperbole, got to talk to Jeff Bell and, I guess, talk a little bit about why now. And it's mostly because they needed to film the Marvel's Most Wanted pilot, so they needed to take them out of the show at this point so that they could go on and film that pilot and set up for that show. I can honestly say I wasn't really expecting it to come this soon, so I'm still a little bit like, what? About the whole thing. Yeah, I don't know. It was just a very surprising development that it happened this soon in the season for me. But if you do want to read the interview, it's actually pretty good. It's up on Hyperbole right now. It goes a little bit into who came up with the spy's goodbye. Basically, why the development came about at this point. And how a little bit of how Coulson's team is going to react now that Bobby and Hunter have left. But were you expecting it to happen when we got this episode?
I didn't realize it would be this one, but looking back, it makes sense because they do need to film pilots fairly early in the season. And they said in the interview it didn't make sense to have them disappear for a couple episodes and then come back and then leave again. So I get it, but my interest in the spinoff is approximately negative 12, so
yeah,
I'm not feeling it. But we'll talk about that when we talk about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, which we might as well get to now, to be honest, because that's pretty much it for headlines. That was the most that we got this week. It was it's a good interview, so I will link to it in the show notes, so go and read through the whole thing. But, yeah, I guess let's just get right into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for this week, because obviously, as we have already established, Bobby and Hunter have left. That is basically the big thing we want to talk about for this episode. So, through the whole thing, essentially, they go after Malik, they head into Russia, and they manage to get themselves caught up in a coup. So they are trying to, or Malik is trying to take out the Prime Minister of Russia in order to basically take over, essentially, and redistribute power. And Bobby and Hunter get caught up in the middle of it. And the story plays out, sort of flashing back and forth between them getting interrogated and what actually happened and unfolded on the mission. Why don't you give your thoughts about this as a whole, seeing as you weren't too... You're not too convinced about this.
I liked Hunter when he first showed up, but he has kind of since then really gone downhill in my estimation, and I don't particularly think he and Bobby have a very good relationship. I don't think they want the same things out of life. Her work is so much a part of who she is, and it's really not for him. He was only there because of her, and I have a feeling those two going off, she's going to end up resenting him for the way things have turned out, and that, and I just find Hunter obnoxious anymore, and I would so much rather be seeing Bobby hanging out with the people in S.H.I.E.L.D., particularly Mac, because she and Mac have a wonderful relationship, and they both understand the sacrifices and are willing to make those, and their work means as much to them as it does to the other, so they get that about each other. So their relationship is far more intriguing to me. So I just have no interest in watching Bobby and Hunter go off on their own show. I find them far more interesting on the main show.
Yeah, Hunter kind of fluctuates for me a lot. Recently, he's kind of been making decisions that have been making me question him as a character. And I think a lot of that is down to him not necessarily wanting this life. Like, he has a very different set of ideals and morals in respect to what he's willing to do that doesn't necessarily gel with S.H.I.E.L.D. As a whole. They do have the same kind of ideals in the respect of wanting to protect people and wanting to keep them safe and wanting to do what is best. But I think with S.H.I.E.L.D. and with Hunter, they have different ideas on how to go about that. And you see that especially with May, who decides that Hunter should, like, kind of pair up with her because she doesn't necessarily trust the way that he is going about things, especially after, like, the last couple of missions that he's been on. So I think it's going to be interesting to see them going off together, if only because I still don't think that Bobby and Hunter are on the same page right now. And I don't know, it's very obvious, especially through the interrogation scenes, that they still very deeply care about each other. In fact, you see it a lot throughout the show. They do still care about each other, and they do still love each other. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're good for each other. So for all the sort of love and emotions that they might have for each other, I don't think this is the right relationship for either of them, especially on a romantic level. I don't think that they're going to do each other many favors. I actually think you've hit it right on the money in that possibly throughout Most Wanted, Bobby is going to come to resent Hunter, because you even see it in this episode when they're talking about they've never been on holiday together, they never had a honeymoon and so on, and you can tell that for Hunter that means a lot more. The fact that he wants downtime, he wants almost a normal life, a normal conventional relationship in the respect of spending time with each other, going on holiday, doing, like, the standard things that you would expect from a couple. Whereas Bobby is all about the mission and the job and her career, and she doesn't necessarily see it as a bad thing. So I don't know how that's going to play out now that neither of them have S.H.I.E.L.D. to hide behind, and they're having to go off with each other, and they're on pretty much the same level, but I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know how Bobby is going to react without having S.H.I.E.L.D. and without having that career. I think she might find herself at a bit of a loss, and I think Hunter is going to want to maybe settle a little bit, and I think we might see Bobby getting a little bit antsy in that respect.
And I wouldn't, like, say that either one is actually more correct in their views of what they value or anything like that. I just think they value very different things, and that will, I think, end up causing an issue between them. Plus, just on a practical side for the show, their ratings keep plummeting. So while they are renewed for season 4 because of syndication, it doesn't bode well, and launching a spinoff off a show of falling ratings doesn't seem all that promising. So if the pilot doesn't go, what do they do with Bobby and Hunter? Like, they spun them off because they saw them as being pretty much the most popular characters. So they're not going to want to lose them. But the interview that they talked about were like, well, there's no going back. We can't just bring them back after this. But if the pilot doesn't go, they're going to obviously try. So I think, I don't know, I think it's just a very messy situation. I don't think it was a good time for a spinoff for the show.
No, and I mean, this time of year is really bad for ratings just in general, so you should always expect a dip. But the dip that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has actually taken has moved it into fractional ratings, which is not good, even at this time of year. So using it as a lead-in to a spin-off show at the moment isn't exactly the strongest position they should be putting themselves in. And as much as, I guess, focusing the cast on a couple more core characters might help them in some respects, and being able to tell more nuanced stories for some of these core characters, especially with someone like Bobby, people really connected with her and loved her a lot. I've seen a lot more varying views on Hunter, but he's still pretty loved in some parts of the fandom as well. So I don't think spinning them off at the moment is the right choice either, but it's happening. It's going to be incredibly difficult for them to bring them back now that they've been disavowed, because they can't come back as they are. They can't come back as Bobby and Hunter. We even see it as Coulson is explaining to them, you know, when they're like, we need to extract them, and you know, they won't be able to ever do field work, and they won't be able to have the same names. They'll have to go under different names, and you're like, they're going. But they've basically written themselves into a corner. Most Wanted has to succeed. Has to. Otherwise, they've lost these characters for good. And at the moment, it's not even being picked up to series. It's just filming a pilot. So we don't even know that we are necessarily going to see this spinoff come to light.
And if its ratings are fractional, it's hitting series lows.
Yeah.
Week after week. So it wasn't its ratings that got it renewed. It was that 4 seasons means syndication money. So, like, that just... Why would you launch another spinoff when Agent Carter has already likely failed in terms of ratings as well? So just... It seems unlikely that it will get picked up to series, but it could be that the Marvel money is good enough. I don't know, but just on a sheer ratings perspective, it seems very unlikely, and then they end up writing themselves into a corner with those characters, because I can't see them just getting rid of them because they're such popular characters.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say for this episode that Spy's goodbye wrecked me. Like, for as much as I didn't want this to happen and I didn't want to see them leave the show, that actually got me really emotional and sort of teary-eyed when you see everyone kind of raising a glass to them and the whole drink. Like, that really affected me, most especially when you see Mech's reaction and you see him looking at Bobby and Bobby looking back. And I was a wreck from that.
That was the only one that got me.
That one really, really got me. I think a little bit with Fitz as well, because obviously Fitz and Bobby spent quite a bit of time together when they've been there. When she was still recovering and they were sciencing together, which was absolutely delightful. But I don't know. It just, that whole scene just really got me. But it was the bit where Mac and Bobby look at each other. And I couldn't handle that. It wrecked me. And especially as well, Mac's reaction when Coulson is like, they're not coming back. And he looks absolutely wrecked. He looks so wrecked at that, and I can't handle Mech when he's upset at all. I have now discovered this. Whenever Mech is upset, I am upset, and please stop making Mech look teary-eyed and want to cry, because it makes me want to cry, and I don't want to cry. Oh, dear.
Mech is the best.
Yeah, I really love him. I think what's going to be quite interesting about Bobby's departure in particular is how it's going to affect Mech in her absence. Because obviously he's very deeply affected by this. I wonder, and actually, here's my hope moving forward, is that we haven't seen a lot of Mech and Fitz interacting with each other. And that's something I've missed very, very much this season. Like, it's one of the friendships that I thought was incredibly strong. And I wonder if maybe at some point they might gravitate back to each other, because Mech was there for Fitz in a very big way. I wonder if they might utilize Fitz in the reverse and have Fitz help support Mech through what he might not want to admit is an incredibly emotional time. That's a hope. I would love to see something like that. Do I think we're going to get it? No. Absolutely do not think that we are going to get that. But if I was to want them to approach this in any way going forward after Bobby's departure, I would love to see those two characters come back together again, because their emotional support of each other was something that I really, really enjoyed previously, and I'm very much missing it. I think that's a dynamic that the show is definitely missing right now. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I guess that'd be fine. I don't have any strong feelings about it one way or the other.
Fair enough, but anything else you want to add for S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Just sigh.
I know. I know. Oh, we did meet Malik's daughter as well.
Yes, we did.
Who looks... She's very kind of creepy in the respect of her presence, and very matter-of-fact, and I'm kind of wondering what they're going to be doing with her going forward, but yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, she seems like her father's daughter.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And she really wants to meet Unward. So, not really sure that that's going to go particularly well, but we'll see what happens. But that's it for S.H.I.E.L.D. for this week.
All right, shall we move on to Supergirl?
Yeah, let's move on to Supergirl.
So, this week on Supergirl, we had the fallout of Jean revealing himself to everybody. So there's a whole military tribunal essentially set up to figure out if anybody knew about Jean and if he was planning anything. And we've got a really obnoxious colonel, and we got Lucy. Lucy's back in her military garb, and she is helping run all the interrogations. But she also ends up being key to saving Jean, because Kara reveals her identity to her, basically, and convinces her that Jean didn't really have much choice to lie, because being an alien on Earth, that's really all you can do to fit in, and kind of convinces her that Jean is worth protecting and saving. So she ends up helping Kara break Jean and Alex out of a prisoner transport, which is kind of awesome. And Lucy eventually ends up taking over the DEO, which is kind of boss. I'm totally into this.
Oh my god. I was worried after we saw her leaving Catco. I was like, what are they going to do? Because I don't want them to write her off. And it seemed to be like slowly moving in the direction of potentially phasing her out of the show. And we've obviously discussed this previously, that that wasn't something I wanted. I wanted to see Lucy and Kara continue to get close and become good friends, and I wanted to see Lucy really carve out a space for herself here, because she seemed, despite having to break up with James, or despite breaking up with James and that ending, she still seemed quite happy and content in herself and finding a new place in National City for herself. And her leading the DEO is probably the best outcome that I can think of, because it not only puts her kind of political kind of head to use, but also her military background. And she obviously has a lot of background and history with aliens or superpowered people and so on. So there isn't anyone better suited to do this than Lucy, in my opinion. So I'm so glad that they're not phasing her out of the show, that she knows the truth about Kara now, and that she has been put in a position that really suits her incredibly well.
Agreed. And I think it's something I wrote in my recap was that she is more open-minded than her other military counterparts that we've met so far. So the military might feel like it's still got its hand in the DEO with Lucy in charge, but she is clearly open to there being good aliens and bad aliens, and Kara's going to be helping her out. So I think that is kind of the best of both worlds. It'll give them some cover that they would need.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good place for the show to be in respect to everything that happened when Supergirl was affected by the red kryptonite. I think that this is a really this is a great character to have in this position, especially as Kara is trying to rehabilitate her image. So having someone in the DEO who can help them out on some level is going to be good. It's going to be really good. So
I imagine we'll start seeing James and Wynn in the DEO more often, because they were already starting to come in a bit more with Jean in charge. But with Lucy in charge, I imagine we'll probably see them there even more, which will integrate Kara's two lives a bit more, which I think could be enjoyable to explore.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so, and were you surprised that she told Lucy?
A little bit. We'd gotten the kind of groundwork laid for the fact that she wanted to, so I knew that it was going to potentially come eventually. I didn't necessarily think it would be now. I thought maybe we might see something getting revealed by the time the finale rolled around, but I'm glad that it's out in the open now. It's one thing that I've really loved about this show is that secrets don't stay secrets from the people that it's incredibly important to keep in the know, except for Cat Grant. Yeah,
though I'm not convinced she doesn't know.
Yeah,
she's just she's biding her time.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, I wasn't surprised either, because Kara already gave James permission to tell her, so she had already been considering it, so it does make sense that she would reveal it. But yeah, so we get Jean and Alex, because they figure out Alex, or Lucy just realizes that Alex is lying about not knowing about Jean, so they arrest them both and take them off to Project Cadmus, which is, yes, it is from the comic books. Tell us about Project Cadmus, Danya.
Oh my god! I will hand on heart, someone spoiled this for me before I got to watch the episode. I was incredibly upset about the fact that I didn't get this reveal in the episode because I was at work when I read this and I freaked the hell out. I was like I was teetering between the two points of I'm so mad this has been spoiled, but this is the most excellent thing that I think the show could have done. Because Project Cadmus is a massive project that goes forward, and you see it. If you've watched Young Justice, you'll know where this is going. It is the project that basically has cloned Superman and creates Superboy, basically. Among others, but it's mostly him. And if they're leading up to potentially the introduction of Superboy, I may lose my crap. I'm already getting myself overexcited at the thought of Supergirl and Superboy being on the same show and Khan being there and just,
It would not surprise me if we saw him maybe in, like, season 2 or 3. Which would also maybe open the door to McGann.
Which, I don't know.
Who has a connection to Jean. We'll just leave it at that.
I'm literally about to cry. I don't.
But they may not want to bring in all these big characters. I don't know.
I don't know, though.
A lot of doors.
I mean, they don't want to physically have Superman there. He's in the world, and they do make reference to him, and we do know that he's still operating in this universe, but someone like Superboy would be something really interesting to explore, because you've got someone who has Superman's powers, but isn't Superman. And could you imagine Supergirl trying to help him through, like, his identity crisis and his, like, trying to figure out his powers and his place in the world? Like, No, I'm having too many feelings.
So basically they've opened up some very interesting doors,
yeah,
or windows with this reveal. But part of the reveal is also that Jean, when doing a little mind meld to the Colonel, sees an image of Jeremiah Danvers alive and at Project Cadmus. And I sort of had a moment of victory dance because I theorized, like, weeks and weeks and weeks ago when we found out that Hank Henshaw was Jean, that we might find out that they did another cyborg Superman and it might be Jeremiah. And then my Boom. Theory just came back and I'm like, So... he may not be, but I think that could be an interesting way to pay homage to Dean Cain's role as Superman. And they've obviously been experimenting on him for many years and have probably altered him in many ways. So
yeah,
it's all very interesting. So Alex and Jean are off to go find Jeremiah and rescue him.
Yes. This is like... I didn't think that they could do anything else that would shock me as much as the Jean reveal, but this has pretty much come right on. It's like right there with it. Just when I thought that they couldn't do anything else that would make me go, oh my god, they did it.
Yeah, and I'm sort of half waiting to find out that Hank Henshaw is still alive because, like, he just got thrown off a cliff and we never saw his body.
Yeah, and as we have learnt, if you haven't seen a body, they're not dead.
And it seemed like we saw Jeremiah, like, die, and he's still alive.
Yeah.
So if Hank got thrown off a cliff, he might come back. Maybe the real Hank Henshaw is Cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
And they'll keep his role in that way. I don't know. It's interesting. I think they're going to play with that a bit, though. So I'm very intrigued.
Yes. Ah. Kudos, Supergirl.
Yes. So, good twists. And next episode is the crossover with The Flash. I'm very excited.
I'm so excited as well. Next week's going to be good.
It's going to be It's just going to be delightful.
Still stuck on that word.
Yes. We're going to have, like, double the Great Gustin on our TVs for the week, and that's wonderful, because he looks like he's very much front and center in the next Flash episode, so.
Yeah, though, Zack Snyder basically was talking this week about why Grant Gustin isn't the Flash in the movie universe, and it essentially boils down to because we can't have nice things, and the movie universe needs to be dark and gritty, and they're committed to the multiverse. And I'm like, they're going.
It was like, he doesn't fit the tone. And I saw a bunch of comments being, what, fun?
Yeah.
Or basically. Accurate?
Basically.
Like, actually Barry Allen?
Yeah. Which now makes me really worried about what they're going to do with The Flash. Because if they're not going to have Barry Allen be kind of a little bit upbeat, then I don't know. It's not going to feel right. I mean, you can have your grim dark universe, Zack Snyder, whatever, but don't make Barry Allen someone he's not. You've already made Superman someone he's not, and I don't know what they're going to do with Batman, but I don't know. Leave Barry Allen alone.
Seriously, like, I was kind of surprised. I was reading some comments. I know you should never go into the comment sections, but sometimes I'm a glutton for punishment. And I kind of wanted to see people ripping Zack Snyder apart. That was my hope. And people were being like total comic book nerds were being like, he's crazy. Grant Gustin is the perfect Barry Allen and things like that. And I'm like, people love him. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, same. I think they hit like a freaking gold mine when they got Grant Gustin to be Barry Allen. I don't think that there could have ever have been a better casting choice, honestly.
But I guess that should lead us into actually talking about The Flash this week. So speaking of Barry on his own show, we'll flail about the crossover next week. So this week, we're back. And a few interesting things happen. So we have a new speedster, a female speedster named Trajectory, who turns out to be a scientist that Caitlin knew at Mercury Labs, who basically stole her research making Velocity 9. And she started taking it because she was just overwhelmed with everything going on in her life. And somehow the drug created like an alter ego named Trajectory. And she went and out and caused a whole bunch of trouble, but all the effects were temporary, as we saw with Jay taking it. And she keeps taking it until she runs out and makes the people at Star Labs make it for her, which, you know, whatever. So what did we think of Trajectory? What did you think of her?
I thought it was an interesting choice to make. It felt, I don't know, I don't know if it was just me, but this episode felt like a little bit like filler, but necessary filler to get the characters to a point of realization about other things happening in this universe. But I didn't necessarily dislike her, I didn't feel strongly one way or the other about this episode and about Trajectory in general. It just, for our second speedster, at least it was kind of, our first female speedster, but I don't know. It was interesting to see her using Velocity 9, that was how she came about her powers, and it had affected her the way it did in terms of splitting her personality. But I have really mixed feelings about this episode just in general, and how it just, the first one back after a little bit of a break, it just felt a bit, oh, okay.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a welcome back. And maybe they probably didn't know specifically when they were having a break. And this was just where it happened to be, which if it was in the middle of a multi-week run, probably would have been fine. But I agree, it wasn't their strongest episode. It had this really strange effect at the end where basically Barry tries to talk her down from using it, and she says, screw that, and her lightning turns blue, like zooms, which is how they get their realization that we'll talk about in a second. And she disintegrates, which is like accelerated cellular degeneration, which is what Jay was dealing with. And I guess his was slowed because he already had the Speed Force in his system and she was taking it pure. But I can honestly say I was not expecting to see her disintegrate.
No, I definitely was not expecting to see that happen either. That was a very interesting side effect. But like I said, this is kind of set up a couple of realizations, but, you know, they now know that overdosing someone with Velocity 9 pretty much could do the same. So I wonder if, even though this is quite tragic, what happened to trajectory. Oh god, I need to stop. If this could be repurposed as some way of defeating Zoom.
Yeah, maybe if, like, they give him too much of it.
Yeah.
Could destroy his system somehow. Maybe. I don't know. I feel like they introduced her to be the foil to Barry in this episode because they're both... We learn that she took it because she was just overwhelmed with all her research and things just going on in her life, and she needed, like, something to help her speed up and also just deal. And Barry is also kind of struggling with the realization that Velocity 9 existed, and we open the episode with him trying to make this jump over a canyon by getting enough speed, and he doesn't make it. Thankfully, Cisco had some drones with a net and caught him, which was kind of amusing. But so he himself is kind of contemplating whether he can use the shortcut to defeat Zoom, and kind of, I feel like up until the very moment that he tries to talk her down, he's considering it. And, you know, he destroys the last sample of it, but that he knows that they could make more if they needed to. So I feel like for a long time he was thinking about it, but he ends up not going with it, whereas she is unable to resist it and has bad consequences as a result. So Barry's going to need to find another way to get faster because drugs are bad.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do drugs, kids.
Like, that was the moral of the story. Drugs are bad, it feels like.
Yeah, it kind of felt a little bit like a holdover from Glee.
It was like a very special episode of The Flash. Drugs are bad. Even speed drugs. Don't take speed. Yeah, but so that was the thing that happened. But because her lightning turns blue, they realize, they start making the connection to Jay. And Cisco's been vibing near Jay's helmet, and he eventually vibes again and sees Zoom take his mask off to reveal Jay. Which, so they're like, oh, Zoom is Jay. So, and Barry's like, oh my god, it happened again. Like, which is a big reason I didn't think Jay was Zoom in the first place, because, like, we're going to go there again? Really? But yeah. They went there again. But I'm still trying to, like, they know that Jay is Zoom, but there is clearly more to this, because we talked about it in the last time we talked about The Flash, because, like, they're saying, you know, we saw him in the same place, like, two different places, and Barry's like, well, we've seen speedsters do speed mirages, except we saw them literally across two different worlds, and I find it hard to believe that a speed mirage would work over that distance.
And not
only we saw Zoom carrying Jay's body.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't see that, but we saw that.
Yeah, so as an audience, we know there's something not quite right. But again, even with a speed mirage, like, would it be able to hold up for that long in and across two worlds, like, in respect to how well it held up? Like,
yeah, they were having two separate conversations. Zoom was confronting Barry in Earth 2, and Jay was on Earth 1, like, getting ready to close the breach.
Yeah.
Like, they were having two separate conversations with two different groups of people over two different worlds. And if that wasn't enough, like, Zoom had Jay's body, and he wasn't trying to fool anybody, except that, like, whatever was going on with the man in the mask who was freaking out. But, like, he drops Jay's body. So clearly there's another entity here we just don't know what it is.
Yeah. It's so frustrating.
So it seems like this clears things up, but it really doesn't.
No, not even a little bit.
So I'm just very confused. Because if they're just going to try and be like, yeah, Jay was Zoom all along, and be like, there's a couple of things that don't line up. But we'll find out.
Oh, dear.
But the last thing I just wanted to briefly mention is Jessie gets victimized again in this episode. She gets injected with the Velocity 9 and needs a blood transfusion. And I was really getting sick of her being a damsel in distress with no agency. And apparently she was too, because she ran away from her father.
which, you know, I don't blame her, really.
This is like the first decision she got to make for herself the whole time she has been on the show.
Yeah, and she's just like, you know what, you're kind of like encouraging me to like find my own place in this world, but you don't want me to leave my room. Like, you want to kind of lock me up and keep me safe, but that's not a way for me to live my life. So she's basically like, okay, you don't get to make decisions anymore. Like, I'm glad that we're both safe. I'm glad that, you know, this is a thing, but I'm gonna go and explore this world on my own. Bye-bye. Which, yeah, I'm kind of glad, because she wasn't really doing much, which is kind of frustrating. So
except revealing that Beyonce is a senator on Earth too.
Yes. I mean, she would be. Come on.
I mean, she probably will be in the future on Earth, on our Earth, but yeah. You know, whatever.
Truth.
But yeah, so that was just kind of a small thing, but I thought it was worth mentioning, because I've just been very frustrated with how little she's had to do except be a victim. And with this show that has struggled with its female characters, that was particularly glaring. So, good for you, Jessie.
Yeah, full for you, Jessie. You go, Jessie.
But, so shall we move on to Arrow?
Oh god, if we must.
If we have to.
Yeah.
So, this was an all-Elicity drama episode, basically. We're dealing with the aftermath of the Elicity breakup and Felicity's moving out of the apartment. She's walking just fine, apparently, with no problems, and I just heavy sigh about that.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, like, her getting tired, maybe, or having to sit down, or having to take a lot more regular breaks, or being slightly unsteady on her feet. Like, even if she is able to walk for longer amounts of time, I would like to see it require at least some more physical therapy in order to, you know, strengthen everything back up again, because, I don't know, the miracle cure is just, it feels cheap. It feels so cheap, and I don't like it at all. I would have liked to have seen at least her getting tired and aching, or it being slightly difficult for her to stand for very long periods of time. You know, that still wouldn't take away at least the standing and walking ability aspect, but it would at least show that it's not as simple and straightforward as we've put this inside you and now you're okay. Yay!
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty cheap, I agree. But we've talked that to death.
I know.
But so the big drama here is that Cupid is back, and she's really pissed off that all the guys that she falls in love with that have no interest in her have died. So she's killing recently married celebrity couples.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do. Whatever. Okay. She's never been entirely logical, so we'll go with it. And so they find her lair, and she had marked Felicity and Oliver's wedding as a point of attack, so they decide to fake a wedding. Felicity's not happy about it. She's not happy about anything in this episode. She's very snarky and snippy the whole time, and so they fake a wedding, and it does successfully draw Cupid out. After Oliver has given these very lovely vows about how he's never going to lie to her again, and she seems kind of touched, and then Felicity gives this lovely speech about love, and Oliver's like, maybe we can have a chance, and then Felicity's just like, no, we're done. So, I don't know. I tend to think, like, they're going to bring them back together at some point, because I just do not see them going with Oliver and Laurel.
No, they're just Ross and Rachel-ing this, and, I hate the Ross and Rachel trope so much. I didn't like it in Friends. I don't like it in any other show since Friends. The kind of moving apart and finding other people and then gravitating back to each other and on again, off again, on again, off again. I just... It exhausts me. It frustrates me. And I don't find any enjoyment in it at all. It's simple, easy drama that has very, very little emotional resonance for me, because it just feels like we're going through the motions. We've seen it hundreds of times before in so many different stories, and it's just, it's easy. It feels like lazy storytelling, because it's a quick way of creating drama in a relationship that, you know, you can write smarter ways of having drama and conflict in a relationship without having to resort to this on again, off again kind of thing. So for me, this just doesn't work. I'm already tired of it. So yeah, and we've only just started.
Something I wrote about in my recap that I kind of think that Felicity's issues with Oliver lying stem back to her father, that he is, you know, the first formulating male influence in her life, and he's a criminal and a crook and a liar who abandoned her, and then he came back into her life just to lie and betray her again. So I have to imagine there's like some subconscious connection for her between Oliver's behavior of lying about his son and her father, and all the sense of betrayal and helplessness she felt from him. So I get it, but that doesn't make it like good, interesting drama to watch unfold. And I'm sure they won't ever like address it in that way, but I can see that being a subconscious issue for her. And that would take a lot of working through for her to deal with. Yeah. So we'll see.
I don't know.
Like I can, like, looking at it that way, I can understand why the lying is such a deal breaker for her because of her history with her father.
Yeah, and it's understandable how they've got to this point. I don't think it was necessary for them to have got to this point. Yeah. I think that they've made such huge strides with Oliver as a character this season that reverting him back just to be able to go through an on-again, off-again relationship, because it makes no sense. Oliver was told at every turn that he should tell Felicity about his son, and he just didn't do it, even after he saw an alternate Earth play out for how it could for how she was going to react to the news. Like, be honest about it. But I don't know, this feels unnecessary. I don't feel like we needed to be going down this path at all. So
yeah, I agree. It just is unnecessary drama when there's plenty of other ways to have drama that doesn't need to feel so manufactured and soap opera-y.
Yeah. Yeah, actually. And the thing is, I hate soap operas. I can't deal with soap operas anyway. So please don't turn my superhero TV into a soap opera, because it's the quickest way to make me uninterested.
Yeah. But the other big thing going on in this episode is that there is a preliminary hearing to decide whether they can take Damian Dark to trial. And it goes pretty badly. They pretty much say Damian Dark is not Damian Dark. He's like a refugee from Markovia or something like that. And so they tried to put Diggle, like Laurel is prosecuting, because she's probably about the only one who is willing to prosecute Damian Dark at this point. They put Diggle on the stand, and in a good bit of continuity, bring up the fact that he helped Thea buy drugs for a vigilante sting.
Yes.
So I was glad that came up. So that was a good bit of continuity there. So they're like, well, okay, vigilantes cannot be on the stand because they're going to have stuff that is just going to wreck their credibility. So Quentin volunteers to testify, and the judge, when she announces her verdict that they can go to trial, makes it in no uncertain terms clear that it's Lance's testimony that's making this go forward, that it's his testimony that's so compelling, and everything is all hinging on Lance's testimony. So I'm back to, he's in the grave.
He dead, son.
Somebody is going to kill him, so the trial won't go forward. And without him, like, Laurel tried to get some other witnesses to the Christmas abductions to testify, and some lied, some, like, were willing to go to jail to not testify. So people are just too scared. So
dead,
I just...
Dead. So
and
dead.
You get, like,
so
this
dead.
Look at Dark's face as the judge is being like, it's all about Lance. Without him, this doesn't happen. Like, put any bigger target on his back, please.
Yeah, dead.
So
dead,
I feel
dead.
Like this really cements that it has to be him in the grave, because one of Dark's followers or Malcolm Merlin is going to come and murder him.
It's probably going to be Malcolm.
And he'll be the one that Felicity meant in the flash forward. You need to kill the son of a bitch. So I feel like it has to be Lance at this point. I will be shocked if it's not. I mean, I guess they could be setting up it to be Laurel too, because she's the only one willing to prosecute it. But I just don't think they'd kill their black canary. I have a hard time believing that.
No, and the other thing is that even if they do kill her off, which I don't think that they will, they still got the problem where they're still going to trial. They will have to appoint someone else to take it to trial. You've still got that key witness that's so damning. You know, removing that chess piece isn't going to make a damn bit of difference. So,
yeah, so the judge was very over the top with how important Lance is to the case. Like, he is the case.
It's like, so sign that death certificate. Why don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. So she's just every bit. It's all Lance. It's all on him. So I feel like that sort of has to cement his fate. I will be shocked if he makes it out of the season alive after this.
Yeah. Ugh, gosh.
I mean, he's been marked for death since, like, season one, so I'm amazed he has lasted until season four.
Yeah, it's because he's really Harry Dresden, and Harry Dresden has a remarkable way of escaping death. And about approximately one person who listens to this podcast is going to get that joke.
So I'm glad you made it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so at the end of the episode, basically, Dark brought his ring. It looked like his wedding ring, I guess. I'm not sure. Into his cell. I wasn't sure what that was about. And Felicity quits the team.
Yeah.
Again. So, okay, we'll see how long that lasts. Probably not very long.
No, I don't know. It's the same as the, like, she has an on-again, off-again relationship with Team Arrow as much as she does with Oliver himself, so same opinion applies for me, anyway.
Yeah. Same Arrow time, same Arrow station with Felicity's drama. So that was a thing that happened. We'll say that. And Legends of Tomorrow was off this week, so nothing going on there.
Yeah. Guess we'll get into our movie headlines for this week. So we've got a couple, unlike TV. So the first thing that we have learnt is that there could be up to 3 Captain America Civil War post-credit scenes, which I don't know how to feel about that, because on the one hand, extra content, on the other hand, is that slightly overkill? Is it completely necessary to have 3? I don't know. Am I gonna say no to more content? No, not really. But how did you feel when you saw this news coming around?
I sort of have mixed feelings, like you, more content, but then is this going to encourage more movies to have three after credit scenes? Because Marvel sort of pioneered the after credit scenes in the first place, and they've gotten popular. So I really hope this isn't going to make other movies have that many, because that's just a long time to sit through.
And I mean, I sit through the credits anyway, as someone who went to film school pretty much and did animation. And have a lot of people who work in the industry, I make a point of sitting through the credits, whether there's an after credit scene or not. That's a personal choice. I know not everyone is able to do that or wants to do that. But I don't know, three after credit scenes as like a theme going forward could be overkill. If it fits this one particularly, then I'll be okay with it if it's like a one-off. But it all depends what it's in the interests of, like what it's setting up, what is so important that they need to make nods to that they're wanting to put three post-credit scenes in. Is this the missing one from Age of Ultron? You know, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it, so I'm kind of on the fence about
it. But I guess it hasn't been confirmed that there will be three. They're just saying there could be.
Yeah.
So, withholding judgment until we know, and what, if we know what's in the scenes to know if they were necessary or not.
Exactly. So, not long to go. About a month. Well, about a month for me, anyway.
About a month and a half for us Americans.
Yeah. Next little bit of news that we got, the Deadpool opening title sequence. So for anyone who's seen Deadpool, they have a really neat little opening title sequence that, instead of giving you the character names, it gives you essentially the tropes that they fall into as characters.
It's the greatest opening credit sequence ever.
It is. It's great. But it was just supposed to be a placeholder before they finish the actual title sequence with the actors' names. It was the placeholder before they knew what actors would be playing which roles. So they just put in the character descriptor trope kind of things. Turns out that they absolutely loved it and they thought it was still hilarious, so they kept it. And I'm kind of glad that they did.
It really sets the tone for the movie from the outset.
Yeah, basically. So I am... yeah, I'm really glad that they kept that as a thing. So, if you haven't seen Deadpool yet, guys, go see Deadpool.
And then listen to our special.
Yes, but yeah, even just for like the opening title sequence, it's great.
So, moving on to something that is not great.
Oh, God.
So, Batman v Superman. We're recording this on Thursday. Movie showtimes begin tonight. I'm not seeing it tonight. I will probably see it this weekend. The critical reviews are in. It currently has a 31% on Rotten Tomatoes.
However, if you look at the audience score, it's tracking at about 89% the last time I looked at it. So the critics don't like it. Audiences seem to be really loving it. I don't know what to think about it. I am seeing such wildly differing opinions. I've seen a couple of reviews from people who I generally trust and have similar taste to, who have essentially been like, Wonder Woman is amazing, Ben Affleck is great as Batman, but some of the story choices are not great, and they're not really sure what they do for them as characters. So I'm still trying to withhold my judgment until I see it. Again, we're recording this on Thursday. I'm seeing it Friday morning. So maybe even by the time this episode goes up, I will have seen Batman v Superman. But
And apparently the horrible doomsday effects from the ads were the same in the movie, because I've heard they're just as bad. So that's a little disheartening.
It is a little bit. I'm hoping that there's enough there for me to really, really enjoy. I really do want to enjoy this movie. I want to love DC on the film side as much as I'm loving Marvel. Like, for me, if both of them are great, it's only going to do good things for both studios, because it'll just keep building up the audiences for this kind of film, and they'll continue to challenge each other in respect to making bigger and better movies. But I guess, yeah, trying to withhold my own judgment until I see it for myself, because I'm not necessarily going to agree with all critics, but I may not agree with the audience either. I think it's really going to come down to personal opinion with this one.
Yeah, and we will obviously do a special.
Yeah. But I don't know what...
Seen it.
Yeah, I don't know what any of us were expecting, though. It's a Zack Snyder movie, and Zack Snyder movies are hugely divisive. Like, no one agrees, ever, on Zack Snyder movies. Ever. You always get a 50-50 split. People either love them or hate them.
You probably get more than a 50-50. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Man of Steel was, like, 90-10.
Touche. Touche.
But speaking of Batman v Superman, we heard previously that there would be an R-rated cut once it comes out on DVD. And now we know that there's going to be a half hour longer. The movie runs at 2.5 hours. I cannot imagine what else could be in this movie for half an hour. That probably a lot more punching and blowing stuff up.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes it R-rated, apparently. And I just cannot imagine buying this at all.
They've cut out... or it was reported or rumored that they cut out Jenna Malone's character, because she's supposed to be in this movie, but she's not going to be in the theatrical release, but she is going to show up in the DVD and Blu-ray release. And the theory, or the running theory, is that she is the female Robin. And I think a lot of the footage that we'll probably get will be of her character. So, I don't know. I don't know what they could have cut out. Obviously, it's very hard to base any opinions on anything until we've actually seen the movie, but they're really pushing. They are really pushing the DVD and Blu-ray release already, before most people have seen this film.
Yeah. Oh, Zack Snyder says, and by the way, it's not a hard R. There's no nudity. There's a little bit of violence. It just tips the scale. Okay.
Zack Snyder's made a lot of comments this week that has made me want to punch him in his mouth. Like, like, comparing the destruction in Metropolis that Superman inflicts in Man of Steel to the First Order destroying planets in The Force Awakens. Like, that's not even the same thing, Zack Snyder, because Superman is a good guy. He's a hero. The First Order is a giant evil organization wanting to take over the universe and destroy things. Like, it doesn't even operate on the same level. I don't understand him sometimes. I really don't.
Yeah. I'm going into the theater with very low expectations, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, our last bit of news is also DC related. Amber Heard has been confirmed that she will be playing Mara, the Queen of Atlantis and wife of Aquaman, in the Aquaman movie.
And so. Absolute badass, basically.
So, and she says that her costume is half suit of armor and half scales.
Oh, so cool. Okay. Do you know what? I'm actually fairly excited for Aquaman. I know it sounds a little ridiculous, but for all of the properties that have gone with the slightly more realistic look and the sort of dull down tone, I think for me the most interesting one that's come out of this is Aquaman, because I love the tattoos, I really like the look. I don't know, it just looks, for me it's like the most interesting, and I really like Amber Heard as an actress, so this for me, it's a really good casting choice, and I love Mara as a character. So, yes, Queen of Atlantis, yay!
So, yay for awesome ladies,
basically.
And obviously, we need more awesome ladies in the DC universe in the films.
Yeah, and so. Not only in DC, we need more awesome ladies in all of our superhero properties.
Obviously, so. Yes. But bring so them. We have confirmation of at least one more, so that's good.
So, that's it for movie headlines. So let's get into Comic Corner. Now, I promised that I would do a Superman Comic Corner, so I'm making good on that promise, and here it is. 5 recommendations for Superman comics ahead of Batman vs. Superman. So, first one I've got is Red Sun. So this is probably one of my favorite Superman runs. Red Sun poses an interesting what-if that fundamentally changes the Superman story. And that is, what if Superman had landed in the USSR instead of America? So it puts the spotlight on Kal-El as a character and whether his core morals remain steadfast despite the change in political landscape. It also offers up a Soviet Batman, Green Lantern as a former prisoner of war, and Lex Luthor doing what he does best. This one is honestly worth picking up, especially if you're interested in a well-written conflict between Batman and Superman. Second one I've got is Birthright. Birthright is the story I'd honestly hope that Man of Steel could be. It unfolds Superman's origins in an incredibly interesting way, and lays some great groundwork for the antagonistic relationship between Lex and Superman, moving from their childhood and Clark's attempt to preserve their friendship to the dissolution as Lex succumbs to his megalomania. It paints Clark as someone who is painfully human, but also incredibly alien as he struggles to protect Metropolis from Lex. Our next one I've got is What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way? So, faced with a threat in the form of the Elite, a group of superpowered individuals that take delight in killing their enemies, What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way finds Clark struggling with his hard line not to kill, especially when faced with an incredibly deadly enemy. It's a great story for really looking at what Superman is about, doing what is right, even when it's difficult.
Man of Steel.
Yeah. Next one I've got is For the Man Who Has Everything. So we saw a variation of this play out on Supergirl this season, and with good reason. This is arguably one of the best stories Moore ever told, especially for Superman. Much like in Supergirl, this isn't just a straightforward what-if story. It finds Superman trapped in a fantasy world where Krypton was never destroyed, under the influence of the Black Mercy, and it's a deeper introspective story that he can't fight his way out of, though the story isn't completely devoid of action. This is a great run to pick up, both as a fan of Superman, but also to see where the inspiration for the Supergirl episode came from. And the last one I've got is All-Star Superman. So this is one that'll tug on your heartstrings. As after flying too close to the sun whilst rescuing a crew of scientists, Superman finds himself dying from solar radiation poisoning. And with very little time left to live, he starts striking things off his bucket list before time runs out. You see him spending time with some hugely important figures from his life, from Lois Lane to Jimmy Olsen to Lex Luthor and even his father. Just make sure you have a box of tissues with you when you pick this one up. Yeah, and that's it. So I'll put links in the show notes as always. So if you do want to read a little bit more about Superman, those are my recommendations. So, feedback time. Let's start off with some of our Twitter feedback that we got this week. And our first comment is from Chad Hopkins, who says, I'd love to hear your opinions on the confirmation of Hamill and Conroy for the upcoming animated Killing Joke adaption. Chad, you want to hear my opinions? My opinion is, oh my god! Yes!
Also, woohoo!
Yay! the second this news dropped, I was freaking the hell out, because also, I'm going to be at San Diego Comic-Con when this premieres. They are doing the only showing of this to an audience at San Diego Comic-Con, because it's like a straight-to-video release. It's not getting a theatrical release. So I am insanely excited about this just in general. And the fact that my Batman and my Joker are in it, I can't control myself. Every time I remember it's happening and it's a thing and it's I get to see it this summer, I lose my mind a little bit more. So my opinion is hell yes.
We may have to do a special on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my god. This is the, yeah. You're probably going to get, it's mostly going to be me incoherently kind of freaking out when we do that special, but we'll power through, we'll do it. I'm just, Chad, I'm so excited for this. You probably can tell, but yeah. Quick, great. Caitlin, move on to the next one before I, like, lose my mind again.
So we only had one more tweet for this week. That was it for our feedback. So Stephanie Merrill says, "Well, I'm sobbing." Shakily raises a shut glass with Bobby and Hunter. So I think you're in good company with Janya on that one.
Yeah, definitely. So before we move on to question of the week, if you guys want to leave us feedback at all, or if you want to get in touch with us or share anything that you loved about this episode or maybe you didn't love, I don't know, whatever you want to say to us, you can do so by getting hold of us on Twitter, which is at HeroHypePodcast. You can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypable.com. Or if you are feeling incredibly generous, feel free to give us a little rating on iTunes and maybe leave a review. We do always really appreciate it when you guys leave them. And in fact, the more creative, the better. But I still can't believe that anyone would love us more than Steve loves Bucky.
I think it was almost as much as Steve loves Bucky.
Almost as much as Steve loves Bucky. Okay. Almost as much. That's Which is still a lot. Right, question of the week. So last week we asked what trait of yours would be amplified by red kryptonite, and Anthony answered by saying probably my short temper or my anxieties like Donya. So yeah.
So our question of the week for this week, we are asking you guys in honor of Arrow, what celebrity wedding would you like to crash?
Yeah. I can't even think of, like, what celebrity weddings are, like, upcoming. Should we make them up? I don't know.
Just, like, fake ones.
Fake ones. I genuinely can't think of, like, what celebrity weddings are coming up. I don't even keep that close an eye on when things are happening.
I mean, it could be a past one, too.
It could be.
I'm sure many people would have liked to have crashed the royal wedding.
Why? yeah, I guess.
I say that a lot about America. Like, we won that war, guys. Come
on. Oh, dear. Oh.
But yeah, so, which celebrity wedding do you guys want to crash? Past, present, future, up to you.
Yeah. Just let us know on any of the... in any of the usual places. But until next week, guys, I'm Donya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.